You're listening to Reflections, the wisdom of Edgar Cayce. I'm Art Ray. Today's guest is Lama Surya Das. Surya Das is an American-born Lama in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. He is a poet, chant master, spiritual activist, and author of many popular works on Buddhism, such as Awakening the Buddha Within and Buddha Standard Time. A teacher and spokesperson for Buddhism in the West, he has long been involved in charitable relief projects in the Third World and interfaith dialogue. He'll be speaking at the upcoming conference, Mindfulness, Being in the Present Moment, a training course in self-awareness, clarity, and inner peace, at the ARE in Virginia Beach from February 15th to the 17th. To find out more, go to edgarcayce.org, click on Events, and click on Conferences. You can also go to Surya Das's website at surya.org. That's S-U-R-Y-A.org.
Okay. So I'm going to begin with a little ancient yet timeless Tibetan prayer and benediction, the famous seven-line prayer to the founder of Tibetan Buddhism, the enlightened master from India, the lotus guru Padmasambhava. May the Buddha's blessings ever awaken and illumine our minds. May the enlightened one's blessing and inspiration ever unfold in our good hearts. May we all together awaken and realize that we've never been separate, incomplete, or apart. Homage to the lotus, the inner guru, birthless, deathless, undying, our true nature, innate enlightenment. So that's our ancient Tibetan seven-line prayer practiced by all the schools of Tibetan Buddhism at the beginning of their chants and meditation sessions. Of course, chanting is a big part of Himalayan Buddhism, as like Indian Buddhism and Hinduism. And many spiritual traditions of the world very much emphasize sacred sound and sacred art and dance, etc.
Oh, yes. And thank you for starting out the interview that way. That was relaxing.
That's the idea. And sacred sound, it's not just that we listen to it. I mean, listening is fine. And it can wash over us and through us and purify our chakras and channels and remove the obscurations, the veils covering reality so we can see further. But also, we can chant ourselves and open our, vibrate and resonate in our different inner energy vortices, chakras and channels and so on, heal our organs, touch others, chant and vibrate together in unison and come into harmony and unity and so forth. So I love chanting, and it's a big part of my spiritual daily spiritual practice.
You have written a book, your most recent book. I know you have a number of books, but the most recent one, Buddha Standard Time, Awakening to the Infinite Possibilities of Now. Could you tell us what your basic message is in that book?
Well, as you said, I've written a bunch of books, more than a dozen, and my big popular bestseller is Awakening the Buddha Within, Tibetan Wisdom for the Western World. And I think that I've written quite a few books about Buddhism and also related things like life's big questions and the spiritual practices and spirituality today and so forth. So this time I wanted to write something about how to apply these ancient, timeless tools and techniques to a modern problem. And the problem I took up is that everybody today seems to say they don't have enough time to do what they want to do, what needs to be done, all the things that they have to do or feel that they have to do and want to do. And I was contemplating this and thinking about what Buddha has to say about time and the timeless and things being impermanent, and yet there's a deathless peace or nirvanic ease that one can experience even here and now. So I took this up, the intersection of eternity and nowness, realizing that we all have, that there's plenty of time for those who know how to use it, that life is long enough for those who know how to truly live, that it's not time we lack, but focus, priorities, and awareness, and that one moment of total awareness is one moment of perfect freedom and enlightenment. We don't need to wait for it. It's not a matter of schlepping towards enlightenment or heaven, or waiting for heaven till after we die, or schlepping to enlightenment through many lifetimes. We can access it anytime, here and now, and heal what afflicts us, outer, physical, inner, mental, and spiritually also, most subtle and secret levels. So one of the meanings of Buddhism or Buddhist Dharma is that which heals us, heals our afflictions. So I think that this is a very important message for us today in our very scientifically minded postmodern era, that there's a great deal of healing and harmony that we can find in these ancient wisdom traditions, not just physical healing, but also mental healing, individual and collective healing, and a spiritual healing and reconciliation, bringing us back to the natural state, our original goodness, like the Garden of Eden, where we started from.
Well, now, what inspired you to write Buddha Standard Time?
Well, I was asking people about what their biggest problems were, and people, you know, today, and people were telling me two things. One, they don't have enough time, and the other thing everybody says is their relationships. So I thought, oh, I don't think I'm going to write about relationships. I don't want to get in trouble. And so I took up the subject of time and the timeless, which is very dear to the heart of spiritual people, how we can experience heaven on earth and realize the deathless state here and now. That's a great subject for us today, how to live in the now. Because if we're not here now, we won't be there then. I can assure you, we always have the habit of leaning forward, being a little ahead of ourselves, being out of our body. We're just living in our head and being out of in touch with our body and our feelings and with the ground beneath our feet. And so I thought that this is a good way in to share what I've learned from the Eastern thought traditions, Buddhism, Hinduism, yoga and meditation, and Eastern mysticism with friends and readers today. There's many practices and exercise in it that bring us back to the moment, that help expand our attention span, and help us concentrate and focus and be in touch with that which is transcendent over all of us and yet imminent, indwelling in each of us. By whatever name we call it, it still is sweet. So this is my subject. And I found that a great response to this book, in that most people are struggling with this feeling of not having enough time. And my idea that we have all the time in the world, it's up to us how we spend it and use it. How to take responsibility and assume responsibility for that and not just be victims or helpless is really a good message today. And a lot of people are interested in achieving this kind of self-mastery or freedom even within their daily lives, not just getting away or waiting till the next vacation or retirement to do so, but to really find more mental space and spiritual clarity in the heart of the moment. There are many, many mind moments in 1 second. That's something we experience when we go deeper into meditation and present awareness, nowness awareness, which we call in Tibet the Buddha within. Nowness awareness is the true Buddha within, not a historical person as Buddha, the teacher who lived in India 2,600 years ago, but total nowness, infinite awareness, selfless, clear light, what we call our innate Buddha nature, our Buddhiness, our true nature. We could call it our divine nature or Godhead, if you like.
Why this topic and this book? Why now?
Well, this now is an evergreen subject. We can find its roots throughout history. The philosophers Hegel and Kant talked about it, and it's one of them had it inscribed on the top of his desk, the simple word now. In the 60s, Baba Ram Dass, formerly Dr. Richard Alpert of Harvard, who helped bring Eastern thought to America big time in the 60s, He wrote the book, the bestseller, Be Here Now. And even now, Eckhart Tolle is bringing that message to us all through his book, The Power of Now, and on Oprah's radio airwaves and so on. I think it's a great subject because most of us are so rarely fully present and accountable. We're not really closely in touch or aligned with ourselves. So how can we be in touch and aligned with each other? And that's to all of our collective detriment, to be out of sync with ourselves. So being here now and living in the here now, being more present rather than absent-minded, this is a great and important message for us today, like a healing balm on many of the anxieties and stresses that distresses us. As we all know, stress is one of the greatest causes of physical illness and mental distress today.
We'll be right back with more with Lama Surya Das on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Lama Surya Das.
Meditation and mindfulness practice, cultivating awareness and relaxation, yoga, exercise, breathing exercises, chanting, prayer. These are great ways to de-stress our outer and inner energy systems. So I think there's no time like the present, as they say. It's now or never, as always. And I particularly like this subject now, as many people are talking about this year, 2012. Supposedly, according to the Mayan calendar, there's going to be a cataclysm or something. I mean, my view is that Mayan calendar is fine, but it's only one of the many calendars of this world. So I think it's going to be more like Y2K or 1984, a much ado about little. But we'll see.
There are a lot of calendars, not just the Mayans.
There's the Western calendar based on the Gregorian calendar. There's the Jewish calendar, in which it's the year 5,500 or something. There's the Chinese calendar. There are so many different calendar systems in the world. I'm not sure that the Mayan calendar accounts for the entire universe. But we'll see. It's fine. It makes its contribution, I'm sure, to our understanding of the macrocosm, the cosmos, and the microcosm, our inner world, which most of us, like Edgar Cayce, are very, very interested in.
Why did you feel compelled to send out this message?
I think one of the biggest diseases we have today is lack of attention and being separate from ourselves, not knowing ourselves, and unawareness. So this is a message about being aware and being here now for each other and for ourselves and for our higher purpose. And that's exactly why. And as I said, many people feel they don't have enough time today, so I'm trying to look at it from different points in the different view, in the different chapters, to explore the possibility that maybe we have more time than we think. Time is so relative. For example, time seems to be so long when we're in pain, when 5 seconds or 1 minute seems like an eternity when we're experiencing pain. But when we're having a great time, just the hours seem to fly by. Time is so relative. And meditation masters and awareness masters have long known the secrets of time and energy and how to prolong longevity and so forth. And these are practices that we can learn and we can do within the yogic traditions of India, subcontinent, Buddhist, Hindu, within the Taoist traditions of China, and so on. And I'm sure that these longevity practices are found elsewhere in the world that I'm not very familiar with. But this is very practical for us today, and a lot of people are interested in immortality. I'm not sure immortality is possible, but longevity and vitality, having a vital life longer, is also extremely important today. So these are some of the things I take up in the different chapters, including in the last chapter what the Dalai Lama calls the Kala Chakra Tantra, the wheel of time, space, and eternity, and the Tibetan view that we're all, each of us is the center of the cosmic mandala or hologram, and that the whole is in each part and so on, and that we're all inseparable and united at that level, that there's great unity to be appreciated in the vast diversity of this world and this universe. And I think that's a very interesting subject also for us today in our shrinking world and our increasingly interdependent and interconnected society, global society, and the global problems that we face.
Well, now, yes, you mentioned the global problems. What do you perceive as society's issues right now?
Well, society has so many issues, I don't need to inform you, but I'm taking up specifically some of them that are more the inner issues, such as ignorance and lack of self-awareness and self-understanding, such as greed and anger and pride and jealousy based on illusions of separateness and not knowing the inner divinity of each and all of us, of not being able to see the light, the Buddha, in everyone and everything. That's more my subject. Of course, we could talk about the problems of higher education and how our higher education today has become mere vocational training, and American education is so much less stellar than it used to be in comparison to the world. We could talk about the prison systems. We could talk about poverty and the great difference between the rich and the poor. There's so many things we could talk about. We could talk about world hunger. But I think environmental degradation and global warming is one of the great problems we face, and that's also just a matter of time until we either become extinct or we deal with it. So I think that's a very timely subject that we all have to think about. And evolution continues, so that's also something that relates to time, evolution, and impermanence. It's very important to notice how things change and not think we can just build a concrete bunker and hunker down until the storm passes over. We'll be like ostriches with our heads in the sand. No one can do it all alone, but no one's exempt from participating. I truly believe that. And we have to become wise and enlightened, service-oriented leaders that we want to see in the world, not wait for somebody in the White House or some other world capital to do it for us. I think we have to awaken together. It's not the time today, I don't believe, just for self-growth and self-help projects. I think we have to consider collective awakening and a great co-creating a better world altogether. And this gap between the rich and the poor and the inequality between rich countries and poor countries and rich and poor in our own wealthy nation, as well as elsewhere, this is a big problem. This great gap between rich and poor has always been a precipitating factor for revolution throughout history. And when we start to see the light, the Buddha in everyone and everything, and not just human beings, but all beings, all creatures, great and small, we naturally treat others as we ourselves would be treated. And the golden rule becomes very natural and possible for us. Otherwise, it's every ego for themselves. And that's at the root of a lot of our problems, selfishness and egotism, based on this illusion of separateness.
How is this message relevant to the business community?
I've actually given some workshops and seminars in corporate America and weekends and so on, based on the principles of enlightened leadership and how nowness awareness and focus and concentration and cultivating mindfulness and awareness helps one perform better and be better at tasks and so on. And people really respond to that. You know, most of us feel like we have no control over our mind or our emotions. And true, it's not a matter of being more of a control freak. That's already enough of a problem in this world, control freakism. But managing our emotions and our mind and our inner weather is very, very possible so that we can be masters of ourselves, masters rather than victims, masters. Independent and autonomous within different circumstances and conditions. And that's very relevant to business people as well as to family people and to all of us. You might be interested to note that a lot of this is being studied and is becoming well-funded by the National Institutes of Health and the Army and the Navy and a lot of academic institutions based on the new neuroscience where MRI scans and fMRIs, the new MRIs, are showing how we can consciously change our brain, that the brain has a great deal of plasticity. It's called neuroplasticity. It's very malleable, and it's not just that we are conditioned by our brain patterns, but also we can recondition the brain patterns intentionally through awareness practices, awareness cultivation, through mindfulness training, through altruism and loving kindness and so on. This is a big new field of research, one of the most interesting cutting-edge fields of the sciences, and this is certainly of great interest to the business community and to all of us in the postmodern era.
I mentioned the business community, but I'm a criminal defense attorney, and I think this might be a useful message for everyone in the legal field and also inmates. You know, the idea that someone's mind can change. Don't just throw them into prison for the rest of their lives because, oh, it's they committed one crime. It's too late. They're gone. You know, it's
well, we used to have some hopes of the penal system and penal code, you know, having some portion of rehabilitation or possibility of rehabilitation. But, of course, we know it has not proved that successful. I didn't know you were a criminal attorney. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
You might be interested to know that Yale has had Buddhist mindfulness retreats for its law students, professors, and judges of 5 days duration, residential sleepover meditation retreats, Buddhist mindfulness retreats. And in India, one of the most popular meditation teachers, who is very elderly now, Goenkaji, who's spoken to the the World Forum in Davos and things like that. He still speaks English. He has brought his 10-day silent meditation retreats to many, many, many prisons throughout India, of course, free and so forth. And many, many prisons have had those 10-day meditation retreats for their inmates, you know, inmates who have chosen to participate voluntarily. And many of them have continued to meditate together and individually in their cells after the retreats are over and the teachers have moved on. And this has shown a very positive effect in reducing the rate of recidivism of people who return to prison through further crimes and so on after being released. So India and the Indian government is a huge fan and supporter of this. I myself have been into some prisons, and there are some prison meditation projects and things like that. Memorably, I think my most memorable experience was in Sing Sing, upriver from New York, which is the maximum security prison on the Hudson River at Ossining, New York, where violent criminals and murderers and so on are incarcerated. It's kind of the Alcatraz of the East Coast. And I really met some interesting people there and, you know, led meditation there on Sundays and things like that. The Quakers do a lot in prisons. So I do think it's relevant to many levels and strata of society. That's why spirituality is a timeless and evergreen subject. It's not just something that's a fad, and it's not just about one religion. People all over the world, including atheists and scientists and non-believers, will believe in something.
What is the fourth time, beyond the three, past, present, and future?
That's a very abstract but interesting subject, so I won't belabor the point. But the notion is, and the fourth time is a translation of the Tibetan word shicha, the fourth fraction of time. Buddhism usually talks about, encompasses, thinks about rebirth and many lives and things like that throughout the three times.
We'll be right back with more with Lama Surya Das on Reflections. You're listening to Reflections, the wisdom of Edgar Cayce. Let's continue our conversation with Lama Surya Das.
The three times, meaning past, present, and future, not just this life, this year, this century, and not just human beings. So the three times is a jargon or common word in all Buddhist languages in Asia. The fourth time is the timeless, which intersects and suffuses and permeates every morsel of the three times. It's kind of like time and eternity, or this world, or heaven and earth. Those who know how to find it can find heaven on earth, can find God even amidst the ashes. So this is, even in the dark, understand that shadows are nothing but light. These are the mystical understandings that one can experience for oneself if one makes this spiritual journey, does these practices, and develops this kind of insight and wisdom and spiritual illumination. So the fourth time is the timeless time within relative or conventional changing time. The Christian mystics called the three times past, present, and future linear time, horizontal time. They called it the changing times, meaning of this world. And the fourth, and didn't use the word the fourth time, but they called heavenly time, divine time, the unchanging time or the timeless. That's the fourth time that permeates, that intersects every moment of horizontal, linear, past, present, and future, sequential time. That's what mystics call the holy now, or the radiant nowness.
What is nowness awareness?
It means being totally present, rather than absent-minded, being aware of what one is doing while is doing it, and in such a heightened way that one is almost transparent. that we don't have any illusions about what we're doing or who we are, that we're not really separate from what we're doing. And that's our true nature, that great oneness with all and everything. That's the virtue of nowness awareness. We try to cultivate mindfulness or remindfulness, bringing our attention, our present awareness back to this moment, to this breath, to this physical sensation in the body, to this moment, and let go of speculations and memories about past and the future, or what's not here in front of us, and hone the attention to be so totally incandescently present that everything becomes clear, as if transparent and illumined. And then it's almost as if we're at the source, at the causal level, rather than effect. That's the virtue of nowness awareness. It's really enlightened awareness. It's a fully awakened spiritual heart mind. And it's the opposite. It's very different than, you know, somebody say so-and-so lives in the past or so-and-so lives in the future. You know, sometimes you have to snap your finger in front of some people's eyes to remind them that you're talking to them. So there's a lot of downsides to being mindless and absent-minded. There's infinite upsides to being totally present and aware, present and accountable. Let me assure you. Anyway, it's something to try and experience for oneself through mindfulness and remindfulness practice. This is the heart of meditation and the contemplative life. Awareness is the active ingredient. Buddhism does not deal much with the supreme creator or higher power. If there's a higher power in Buddhism, it's awareness with a capital A. That's the panacea and antidote to all that afflicts us. According to Buddha's enlightenment, there may be other ways of looking at life, certainly.
I guess the idea of awareness, that's kind of the opposite of how some people might want to use alcohol or other substances to reduce their awareness, to reduce stress.
That's right. That's why we have those habits or compensatory behaviors, compensating for our stress, our pain, our despair, our unhappiness, or whatever. And that's all well and good, but then we have to accept the results, the implications. We may become addicted, or we may fall asleep at the wheel. We may, you know, have a car accident. Of course, there are no accidents. Everything has causes, but we call it an accident. But the cause is mindlessness, usually induced by something or other, like you said, like alcohol. But it could be fatigue. It could be mere distractedness. Again, awareness is so helpful. Rather than, you know, mindfulness is the opposite of mindlessness, and mindlessness at the wheel is deadly. But what about mindlessness at the wheel of our lives? So many people feel like they're victims and other people are doing it to them. When we cultivate this mindful awareness, we start to realize who's responsible and what are the real gears and levers and buttons that we might want to push or pull in this life to achieve what we want and need, and not just for ourselves, but for those we love and eventually for all.
What distinguishes Buddha Standard Time from the other recent books about living in the now?
I think that, as I mentioned, and I do recommend The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. It's a very popular bestseller, and he has some other spin-off books and products and tapes and guided meditations. Very good. It's a little simplistic for my taste, but then I'm a Buddhist scholar and Tibetan Lama and lived in Asia for 25 years. He's very Western. He was a Western scientist, mathematician, I think. He's from Holland or Germany. And so it's very simple. I'm covering a lot more ground, mystical ground, Asian thought, Western mysticism, a little bit more of neuroscience, what I call the new neurodharma, or the intersection of Buddhism and meditation on one hand, and the new neuroscience on the other. So I also tell a lot of stories. Eckhart Tolle is not the best storyteller, but I'm a collector of Tibetan teaching tales and kind of like biblical parables. I even have a book of them, 158 Wisdom Tales from Tibet, called The Snow Lion's Turquoise Mane, if you're interested, if you like teaching tales. It's the only anthology of Himalayan tales of its kind. I think Buddha Standard Time is unique in its approach to to what we're doing to ourselves, to how we give ourselves this time sickness, this feeling of pressure that we don't have enough time, and what we can do about it. It's not as simple to just say, be here now. We're already here now, but we don't know it. That's why we need to cultivate more awareness so we can settle into our body and mind, heart and soul, and be more at one with ourselves instead of so fragmented, scattered, distracted, alienated, and even despairing or depressed. So many people today are depressed in this country, as you know. And a lot of people are dealing with their stress, as you said, with addictive substances. And I'm not a teetotaler by any means or a prude, but I do know the downside of things that bring on heedlessness and mindlessness, and I've seen it myself.
What's your advice for people who are juggling the demands of marriage, kids, and a job?
I think take a breath and take a break, even for 3 seconds. It will help. It's very important to bring this into every aspect of daily life, as I was saying before. Not just wait until next weekend or next summer vacation or after you retire and the kids go to college. Let's face it, the kids might only go away for a few years, then they come back and live at home anyway these days, it seems. So I think we have to integrate spirituality, integrate the fresh air of awareness, of present awareness, of this awareness cultivation and mindfulness into every aspect of daily life at home and at work. For example, as a Tibetan yogi, we learn to, when we wake up in the morning, sit up in bed and stretch and breathe deeply 3 times and reach to the sky and shout, ha. It's a great way to wake up our energy. It may wake up your partner, too. I don't know about that, if you have one. But it's a great way to wake up your energy and get started. And then, you know, start your daily ritual, the washing and the bathroom and whatever, heading to work or whatever your lifestyle is. I also recommend that one takes breaks, let's say, create sacred pause now and then throughout the day, moments of mindfulness, not just try to rely on when you have 15 minutes or half an hour or 45 minutes to meditate or go to yoga class or exercise or sit in the garden or take a walk. To create moments of mindfulness for 5 or 10 seconds or a minute throughout the day, these moments of mindfulness can punctuate, can puncture, can deflate the pressure of a claustrophobic day, can really help the fresh air of nowness flow through so one can be more here and now and feel the buoyance of spirit, the miracle of life, not just worrying about if you can have enough money when you retire. If we're constantly worrying, we'll be worrying then too. That's karma, conditioning. This is a good time to cut the chain of karma and start living more here and now and be in the moment, even when we're planning. Planning takes place in the moment. It's fine as long as we're aware of it. Even when we're remembering, there's nothing wrong with remembering. Remembering is a nowness awareness activity at work. It's just not living in the past or future. But being here now, it's a very nourishing and nurturing way to be and relaxing. Being more centered in our heart center, not just in our heads, our thoughts and our wants, wishes and desires. Because things are as they are. And the more we see it as it is and can be with it as it is, the better choices and decisions we'll make. In fact, let me mention the Buddhist saying, contentment is the greatest form of wealth. Because wealth is an obsession to so many people, but we don't understand what wealth really is. There's no end to the amount of zeros people seem to think they need at the end of their list of assets, their net worth. But there's so many unhappy rich people, as we all know, and suicidal rich people too, or alcoholic ones. So I think it's very important to look into what are really the causes and conditions conducive to our own happiness and fulfillment.
We'll be right back with more. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Lama Surya Das.
What are really the causes and conditions conducive to our own happiness and fulfillment? Peace and harmony, inner peace as well as outer peace. And what is the way to it? And find something very authentic that works for oneself. There are different courses for different horses, but we have to find the one authentic way that works for oneself. That's very important. And contentment is the greatest form of wealth. Does not and should not imply just some kind of complacence or indifference. In fact, radical acceptance, as we call it, radical acceptance helps us to see things as they are, be more objective, like accept the diagnosis. And then, having accepted the diagnosis and being aware of what the problem is, we might begin to enter onto a cure. If we don't accept the diagnosis, how can we begin into a cure? So I think we shouldn't confuse acceptance with mere complacence or indifference or giving up. In fact, acceptance has its own transformational magic. For example, if so many of us say, I love you, now change, you know, to our mates. I love you as you are, now change. You know, you just need a little tweaking. That's fine, you know, if you're in a good state with your mate. That's fine and playful to dance around that. But I can assure you a little, this goes a very long way to transforming your relationship for the better, rather than always trying to change them. A little acceptance goes a long way towards transforming your relationship for the better. And that's, after all, the real point.
Do you have a website?
I do. Please look at surya.org, www.surya.org, that's S-U-R-Y-A.org, and you'll find my Twitter feed and Facebook, my teaching schedule and other things. In fact, aren't I going to be in Virginia Beach at the Casey Center Conference in February?
Oh, yes, February 15th to the 17th. At Mindfulness, Being in the Present Moment, a training course in self-awareness, clarity, and inner peace.
I look forward to that training.
Oh, yeah.
I've done that myself. It's good stuff, my dear.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, that'll be great. And well, we're actually about out of time. Do you have any final thoughts before we go?
Final thoughts. Well, we've touched on this. I want to go back to this. I'm not going to keep beating the drum of nowness. I want to play off the golden rule. We all know what that is. Treat others as you would be treated. But we treat ourselves like crap so much of the time today. I like to think about what I call the diamond rule. Seeing the light, the Buddha, the divinity in everyone and everything, not just the people you like, not just your favorite pet. Try to perceive that each of them wants and needs and deserves this as we do. See the miracle of life and the light and the hope in their eyes, that they have a mother that loves them, and so forth. This is what I call the diamond rule, seeing the Buddha, the light, the divinity in everyone and everything. And then we will naturally treat others as we would like our beloved child to be treated. So I wish you all happy and sacred and peaceful holy days, and to try to think of the spirit and cleave to the high ground during these holidays, and not just waste it in too much unhealthy activity, fun as that can be.
Thank you for talking about this this interesting subject, and thanks for coming on the show today.
It's my pleasure. I'm a big fan of Edgar Casey and his great healing ministry, and I've actually been to the Casey Center in the past, and I love your library and your work, so thank you for all your good work, and blessings to one and all.
And now it's time for the Thought for the Day. And today's Thought for the Day will be read by Kimberly Rose. Kimberly Rose is the host of the radio show Interviews with Kimberly Rose on CBS Sky Radio. Well, hello.
Hello.
And what's today's Thought for the Day?
Today's Thought for the Day is reading 610.1. To meet the disturbing factors with as much joyousness as if they were bringing pleasure in the material sight will alter much in the heart and mind of the seeker. For that which is the result of thinking of individuals is related one to another. And I love this because here it is. We are all mirrors to one another. It's so true. When we, even when I like to look at something when I meet something that just may be very disturbing, if somebody says something, I like to listen in what, if it disturbs me, what is it that I'm trying to learn or be aware of within myself? If somebody, says, you know, looks and says, you know, well, you know, you really hurt me. You let me down. You weren't there for me. Instead of taking it as guilt, or in a disturbing, bad way, I try to really say, okay, I'm going to put light on that and really hear what that person is saying. And I find a lot of times that it's mirroring to me that, okay, if I'm not there for someone or I don't have time for someone, this is just an example, that the joy that comes in that is that somewhere I'm trying to take time for myself. You know, that maybe I need to take time for myself, and that there's a message in that for me. And so everything in life, even if it's a tornado that or of an experience that a tornado has come through, what is it saying to me? To me, it's telling me I see joy in the calm after the storm of things that have been cleared away. And so I really think if we meet things with joy, it really shifts our experience.
Oh, yes. Because you can't just be displeased when a big challenge comes up, because that comes up all the time.
We can turn any situation around, even when we feel that you're going down the rabbit hole, you know, and you're trying to control things. You can add water and make it a water slide. You can enjoy it. You can make it anything you want. So why keep yourself in the misery?
Well, thanks for doing the Thought for the Day today.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for the show today. Thanks to Lama Surya Das for talking to us about Buddhism. You can find out more at his website, surya.org. That's SURYA.org. Make sure to look up his most recent book, Buddha Standard Time. Also, he'll be speaking at the upcoming conference, Mindfulness, Being in the Present Moment, a training course in self-awareness, clarity, and inner peace, at the ARE in Virginia Beach from February 15th to the 17th. You can find out more by going to edgarcasey.org, clicking on events, and then clicking on conferences. Thanks to Kimberly Rose for the thought for the day, and most of all to you, the listener. Thanks for listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey.